one of those hot, hot Los Angeles afternoons. I drove my car into the hills above Hollywood Land, the scent of honeysuckle thick, sweet in the air. An ordinary house, a Spanish house like all the rest of them in California. White walls, red tile roof, a patio out to one side. Perhaps, looking back, if I'd been as keen to stay out of the house of death as I had been to get in.
Yes?
Is Mr. Nerdlinger in?
I don't know, sir. Who wants to see him?
Mr. Huff.
And the business?
Personal. Getting in is the tough part of my job, and you don't tip what you came for till you get where it counts. My business is personal.
I'm sorry, sir, but they won't let me ask anyone in unless they say what they want.
It was one of those spots you get in. If I push the personal, I'd be making a mystery out of it. And if I say I'll wait, I'd be making myself look small. And that never helped a sale yet.
All right, I see. I told Mr. Nerdlinger I'd drop in, but never mind. I'll see if I can't make it some other time.
She's worried. Maybe she's turning away a friend.
Maybe you better come in.
Oh, thanks.
I walk in. Into the darkness of what you, reading your papers, will call the house of death. Furnishings? Mexican rugs, Spanish furniture, the kind that looks pretty but sits stiff. And what the reporters later call blood red drapes, drawn.
Yes?
A woman was standing there I'd never seen before. She was maybe 31 or 2, with a sweet face, light blue eyes, and dusty blonde hair. She was small and had on a suit of blue house pajamas. She had a washed-out look.
I wanted to see Mr. Nerdlinger.
Mr. Nerdlinger isn't in just now. I'm Mrs. Nerdlinger. Is there anything I can do for you?
Nothing to do but spill it.
Huff is my name. Walter Huff of the General Fidelity of California. Mr. Nerdlinger's automobile insurance runs out in a week or two, and I dropped by to see if I could renew it.
Insurance?
Just took a chance coming here in the daytime. Happened to be in the neighborhood. When do you think would be a good time to see Mr. Nerdlinger? You think he could give me a few minutes right after dinner? I wouldn't want to cut
him. Wait. What kind of insurance does he carry, Mr. Huff? I'm sorry, I forget.
Just the usual. Collision, fire, theft, public liability.
Yes?
Pretty routine stuff, but he ought to attend to it in time so he'll be protected.
I'm afraid I don't know anything about insurance, but he did mention the automobile club.
Is he a member?
No, he always meant to join. The representative was out here talking about insurance.
Well, you can't do better than the automobile club. They're prompt, liberal in their view of claims, and courteous straight down the line. Haven't got a word to say against them.
One thing you learn in my trade, never knock the other guy's stuff.
And they're cheaper.
For members.
I thought only members could get it.
What I mean is this. If a man's going to join the automobile club anyway for breakdown services, parking tickets, things like that, he might as well take their insurance too. It's cheaper. But if he's just joining for their insurance...
Oh, I see. Sit down, Mr. Huff.
Thank you.
I see what you're saying, but what the man from the automobile club was also saying was that... If we were to take...
She chattered on and on about the automobile club, but I'm starting to sense something else. When you sell as many people as I do, you don't go by what they say. You feel it, how the deal is going. This woman isn't interested in the automobile club. This was nothing but a stall. Maybe she wants to split my commission 50-50 behind her husband's back. Plenty of that goes on, but a reputable agent don't get mixed up in that. I was just wondering how to deal with that. When I saw something I hadn't noticed before, she was walking around the room, and underneath those blue pajamas was a shape to make a man nuts. I was thinking of what I would say to her when all of a sudden she looked at me, and I felt a chill creep straight up my back and into the roots of my hair.
Mr. Huff, by any chance, do you sell accident insurance?
Accident?
Yes, accident.
Maybe that don't mean to you what it meant to me. In the first place, accident insurance is sold, not bought. You get inquiries on fire, theft, burglary, pigs taken to the air, anything except accident. You have to sell accident to them, slowly, with delicacy. I've got my answers lined up, and I tried to keep my eyes off her, but couldn't. Then she sat down beside me, crossing one long leg over the other.
Well, we handle all kinds of insurance, Mrs. Nerdlinger.
Would you like me to talk to Mr. Nerdlinger about this, Mr. Huff, privately? Then I could get back to you.
That would be fine.
It would save time.
Time's important. Mr. Nerdlinger ought to attend to this at once.
After he and I have talked, then you can see him. How about tomorrow, say, 7:30?
Fine. Tomorrow night will be fine.
I walked out the front door, my feet following my footsteps somehow down the garden path. I got in the car, bawling myself out for being a fool, just because a woman had given me one sidelong glance. The office, General Fidelity.
Didn't notice? What do you mean, didn't notice? It's written down here in black and white.
George Keyes, head of our claims department, holding a business conversation down his phone.
It's your goddamn job to root out phony claims. Jesus Christ Almighty, are we in the insurance business or never, never land?
Keyes is the most tiresome man to do business with in the whole world. You can't even say today is Tuesday without he has to look on the calendar and then check if it's this year's calendar or last year's, and then find out what company printed the calendar, and then find out if their calendar checks with the World Almanac calendar. He gets fatter every year and more peevish. But give him a phony claim, and he's a wolf.
Walter!
Keyes?
That truck driver down Sacramento you sold that policy to 6 months ago?
Yeah.
Only turns out he torched the truck, and now he's trying to lay it out.
What are you beefing to me for? I remember that case, and I clipped a memo to that application saying I thought he should be thoroughly investigated. I didn't like his looks, and I won't have
you... Walter, I'm not getting at you. Here's your memo right on my desk. But if other departments in this company were half as nimble as you...
Oh.
And get this, Walter, even after they issued the policy in plain disregard of your warning, and even with that warning still staring him straight in the face, day before yesterday, when the truck burned, they'd have paid in full if I hadn't sent a tow car up there, pulled the truck out, and found a pile of wood shavings under the engine.
Have you got him?
Had him in here for a little chat. Broke in. Takes a plea tomorrow. What I'm saying, this company were run proper like in the old days, old man Norton ran it instead of his son.
Your views on young Mr. Norton don't interest me in the least. If young Norton is a man we have to do business with, then he's the man we have to do business with. I tip my hat to whoever pays my check.
That's your trouble, Walter. You take the easy line.
Yeah, and I've never been happier.
Bye, Walter.
Bye, Keyes.
Mr. Huff?
Yes, Nettie?
Mrs. Nerdlinger called. Said it would be inconvenient for you to call tomorrow night. Said she'd let you know when to come.
Thanks, Nettie.
Walk back to my office. Sit down and stare out the window. Wonder what advice I'll clip to Mrs. Nerdlinger's form, if I ever get it. She called 3 days later, leaves word for me to come at 3:30. Again, it's a hot, sweltering California afternoon. The sweet, sickly smell of honeysuckle.
Mr. Huff.
Mrs. Nerdlinger.
Come through.
Oh, thank you.
Again, the darkness. This time, she's wearing white. White blouse over a short pleated skirt, covering those long, long legs.
Our servant's off today. Just made myself some tea. Care to join me?
Somehow, it isn't a surprise. Servant off. Tea just made.
Oh, no, thank you. I'll only be a minute. Has Mr. Nerdlinger agreed to renew? I presume that's why you sent for me.
Oh, sit down, Mr. Huff. Have some tea. I like tea. Makes a break in the afternoon.
Well, you must be English.
No, native Californian.
Don't meet many of those.
No, most Californians were born in Iowa.
I was myself.
Sit down, Mr. Huff.
Those white legs beneath that starched dress. I needed to sit down.
Lemon?
No, thank you.
Two sugars.
No sugar, just straight.
No sweet tooth.
She smiles at me. White teeth, wide, slightly carnivorous.
I do a lot of business with the Chinese. They got me out of the American way of drinking it.
I love the Chinese, Mr. Huff. Whenever I prepare chow mein, I buy all my stuff from a Mr. Ling. Do you know him?
Known him for years.
Well, I never.
So we get to talking about Mr. Ling, the Chinese grocer. Am I an idiot or what? The starch in that dress is positively crackling.
Well, how about these policies?
My husband's still thinking about the automobile club, but I think he'll stick with you.
I'm glad of that.
Mr. Huff.
Yes, Mrs. Nerdlinger.
I didn't say anything to him about the accident insurance.
Oh, no?
I hate to talk to him about it. It's awful to have to tell him you think he might have an accident. But, you see, he's the Los Angeles representative of the Western Pipe and Supply Company.
Well, he's in the office, isn't he?
Yes, but he spends a lot of time out at the oil wells.
Plenty dangerous knocking around there.
Makes me ill thinking about it.
Doesn't his company carry insurance on him?
Not that I know of.
Man in his business ought not to take chances.
I should be thinking clear. I know I should get up right now and drop those renewals and everything else about her like a red-hot poker. Instead, I sit imprisoned in that dark room.
How would you like it if I were to talk to Mr. Nerdlinger? Not say anything about where I got the idea, but,
I just hate to talk to him about
it. I'm telling you, I'll talk to him.
But then he'll ask me what I think. I'm worried sick. Mr. Huff, would it be possible for me to take out a policy for him without him knowing?
There it was, the whole deal. I knew I should leave then. But what I did do was put my arm around her, pull her face up against mine, and kiss her on the mouth hard. I was trembling like a leaf. She gave me a cold stare, then she closed her eyes, pulled me to her, and kissed back. Out of our clothes like weasels in heat, darkness and wetness shamelessly turning, twisting, gouging on that vast sofa, digging deeper and deeper in that tiny dark room with the hot California sun beating outside.
I lost my head.
It wasn't all you lost.
I've never done this before. Honest. I love my husband.
Yeah, I could tell.
I don't know what came over me. I love him more here lately than ever.
What do you mean, more here lately?
Oh, worry.
You mean out there in the oil field, some rainy night, some crown block might fall on him?
Don't talk like that.
But that's the idea, right?
Yeah.
I can understand that. Particularly with this setup.
What do you mean, setup?
Why, a crown block will...
What?
Fall on him.
Please don't. I'm worried sick. What makes you say that?
You're going to drop a crown block on him.
What?
Well, maybe not a crown block, but something. Something accidentally on purpose will fall on him.
You're joking.
Uh-uh.
You must be, or you're crazy. I've never heard of such a thing.
I'm not crazy, and I'm not joking. And you've heard of such a thing, or you wouldn't have invited me down here all alone this afternoon and do what we just did.
Get out of here.
Don't worry. I'm going.
Get out of here, and don't you come back!
God. Thank God for the rain. It rains and rains. I sit home. Listen to the radio. Stare down into this pit. Down and down. deeper and deeper. A voice keeps yelling, "Get back! Get back!" But I step ever closer. At 9:15, it happens. She stands there, rain glistening on her white raincoat, white cheeks, white hair.
How did you get my address?
Phone book.
Your husband must be out.
Down at Long Beach, putting in a new well. Lola went to the picture show.
Lola?
His stepdaughter. Walter, how could you say those things to me?
Because they're true, aren't they? That's what you're going to do.
That's why I've come here tonight.
Yeah?
So I can get it right out of your mind. I never meant what you thought I meant. Well, I suppose I should be grateful, really, for you pointing out, however crudely, how my words, what I said, could be misinterpreted. Aren't you going to invite me in?
It's down there, right beneath me. The hole heaving Magilla. I'm swaying on the edge, leaning. Is this love?
Walter. You called me Walter just now. What's your name?
Phyllis.
Phyllis. You seem to think that because I can turn you in, you ain't going to do it.
I'm not going to do it.
You are going to do it. You're going to do the whole goddamn deal. Because I'm going to help you.
What? You help me?
Murder your husband. Come on in, Phyllis. Come into my home.
I'm falling. I've stepped over the edge. I'm falling.
Why, I couldn't have anybody... It would be...
You couldn't have anybody help you? Come inside, Phyllis. Come in.
Thank you.
She enters.
Listen, you better have someone help you, Phyllis, or you're dead. Sure, it'd be real smart to do it all by yourself, nobody the wiser. But you couldn't. Not when you're up against an insurance company. For that, you need an insider.
Why would you do it?
For you.
Me?
Yes.
And for what else?
Money.
You'd murder my husband, risk the gallows for me, the money we get?
And you'd better say what you mean, too. Speak your heart, because when we start to go down that long road, baby, we've got to be together. Two hearts as one.
Please, Walter, don't let me... It's...
Yeah, it is. And then some.
I'm going to. I can feel it. Why? I don't love him. But he's never done anything to me.
Yes or no?
Yes.
She wanders over to the sofa, sits down tiredly.
He's not happy. We'd be better off dead.
Yeah?
That's not true, is it?
Not from where he sits.
I know. But there's something in me. I don't know what. Maybe I'm crazy. Loves death. I think of myself as death in a white shroud floating through the night. I'm so beautiful and sad. Hungry to make the whole world happy by taking them where I am. Out in the night. Understand, Walter?
No.
Nobody could.
We're going to do it?
We're going to do it.
All the way to the end?
All the way to the end.
As we seal our contract on the carpet, I look up and catch our two bodies in a mirror. It's strange. Whatever the charnel house of our loins beneath, chopping, ripping, gouging, over my shoulder, her face floats cold as a moon in a sky of stars. I turn away, return to my darkness. Over the next few days, we drove unendingly, ceaselessly in my convertible. The yellow sun hammering down, reflecting off two pairs of sunglasses, behind which murder is planned.
You've never mentioned anything about this accident policy to him?
Never.
All right. How were you planning to do it?
Well, take out a policy first.
Without him knowing?
Yeah.
Ha ha. Holy smoke. You'd be dead already. Turning in the wind. So what were you going to do then?
Our swimming pool was going to make out a hit his head or something. That's what people do, isn't it?
Some guy wrote an article in the newspaper a while back saying how most Californians died in the swimming pools. Since then, every have-a-go Joe has been knocking friends and family on the head and then cheerfully pretending they drowned there. We got two cases right now where claimants are going to end up choking on a rope. Get this, Phyllis. There's three essential elements to a successful murder. The first is help. One person can't get away with it. You need an accomplice. The second, time, place, method, all got to be worked out in advance. The third is audacity. You got to have balls.
Balls?
You ever follow these gangster slangs in the papers? Oh, they're sweet. First, they got someone on the inside, an accomplice, telling them where the guy is going to be and when. Say a cinema, such and such a time. They got the place and the time. Drive up, keep the engine running, Lucky Harry turns up carnation and buttonhole, waltzing down the street. At the very last moment, just as he's about to buy his ticket, surrounded by crowds and underneath all the lights, four or five of them walk straight up, surround him, bang, bang, bang. One in the head, they walk off, climb in their cars, drive off cool as Cary Grant. Now, you be the police and try to convict. Each one's got a cast iron alibi. They were all only seen for a split second or two by people so scared by all the bullets flying around, they didn't know whether they were coming or going. What happens? No one can testify. They walk scot-free.
We drive a while, then sit in a cheap diner. I'll tell you something else wrong with your swimming pool theory. No money.
They gotta pay you.
Yeah, but how much? I'll tell you where the insurance jackpot is. Railroads. Everyone thinks railroads are dangerous, except insurers. We got our tables. We know you're less likely to die on a train than in your own bed, so we make it a big selling feature. Double indemnity, we scream. You die on a railroad train, we pay you double.
But hardly anybody does.
Ah, exactly. Except one guy. $50,000.
$50,000?
This is what we do, baby. I got it all worked out. Tomato ketchup on my lips. Cold, greasy hamburger untouched on my plate. I told her. Then we left. Dusty traffic roars past us on the dusty road. We make love on the back seat as the hot sun beats down. Two bodies clad only in sunglasses. You think I'm nuts? All right, maybe I am. But you spent 15 years in the insurance business, maybe you'll go nuts yourself. You think it's a business, don't you? Like your business, but it's not. It's the biggest gambling wheel in the world. A roulette wheel on which you bet your house will burn down and we, the wise guys, bet it won't. We know best because we got all the tables, calculations, and percentages. We know your house burns down less often than you fear it will. So we win. At least my bosses, the rich guys, win. Me, I'm more like the croupier behind the wheel who lies awake nights trying to figure out all the angles. And then one night, one sleepless night, I get to thinking I could crook that wheel myself if I just had an accomplice out front laying down my bets. Then maybe I could jerk that bitch of a wheel plumb off her axis so she spills every last nickel into my lap. Morality? Screw morality. Another thing I call your attention to, Mr. Nerdlinger, a feature we added in the last year, is our guarantee a bail bond. We furnish you a card and say you're at the police station following some incident. You produce this card and you're free to go until your case comes up for trial. Since that's one of the things the Automobile Club offers, and you're thinking about joining the Automobile Club.
Yeah, well, I pretty much gave up on them.
He sits opposite me, a big, blocky guy with glasses, sweats a lot.
I'm glad to hear that, Mr. Nerdlinger. Why don't we fix this thing up right now?
Yeah, why not?
Phyllis and the witness, her stepdaughter Lola, sit a little way off by the window, winding wool.
The papers, Mr. Nerdlinger, if you'll just sign right here, here, and here.
One of them, though, doesn't have anything to do with auto insurance. I slipped it in. An application for an accident policy.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nerdlinger.
And now the difficult part. I have to sell him the accident policy so hard that Lola, the witness, remembers it. Phyllis has to oppose it so hard, Lola remembers that, too. Finally, having sold him the thing so hard, I have to ensure he doesn't actually buy it. I'll tell the investigators I sold it to him a few days later in his office, privately. But it won't be me they're suspecting.
Oh, one other thing, Mr. Nerdlinger. I know it's not a subject most of us like to think about, let alone discuss. But you're a family man. Here you are sitting in the bosom of your family.
What is this?
You have family responsibilities, and you're in a sometimes risky business, the oil business. I was wondering if you'd ever considered taking out an accident policy.
I thought you'd come here to sell automobile insurance.
I don't want you having anything to do with any accident policies, Brad.
Phyllis, let me deal with this.
We go on for half an hour at least, me hammering on, thinking up every reason why you should buy it. Phyllis opposing me tooth and nail. Nerdlinger sitting there in the middle, impotent, waiting for me to go. At last, I rise.
Well, I guess that just about wraps it up.
Yeah.
I'll be going now.
Oh, Mr. Huff?
Yes? Lola, isn't it?
Yes, I was wondering. I've got to go downtown to the movies. Would you mind giving me a lift?
Well, sure. Sure.
The last thing I wanted, but I couldn't refuse. We go down to my car and drive off.
Mr. Huff?
Yes?
I think I should tell you. I lied.
Lied?
I'm not going to the picture show.
No?
I'm meeting someone. Secretly.
Oh.
At the drugstore. You won't tell me, will you? You know, there are reasons I don't want them to know. At home.
No, of course I won't.
It's just here. Mr. Huff, I'd like for you to meet my friend, Mr. Sacchetti.
How are you, Mr. Sacchetti?
Sir?
A fresh-faced, nice-looking young Italian guy.
We've got to go, Mr. Huff. Again, thanks, and please don't tell my parents.
I arrive home. Phyllis turns up humming a Nelson Eddy tune.
You like my dress?
Huh?
You like my dress? White. Bought it this afternoon.
It's okay. How do you think it worked out?
Where'd you leave Lola?
The picture show.
Where'd she go?
I didn't notice.
Anyone waiting for her?
Not that I saw. Why?
Oh, no reason. She's been going around with a kid called Sacchetti, and no good. She's forbidden to see him.
I didn't see him. Why didn't you tell me about Lola?
What?
When I said I wanted a witness, I just meant someone you know, a neighbor.
She's as good as any, isn't she?
Holy smoke, there's a limit, Phyllis. I'm having to deal with the daughter of the guy I'm going to kill.
What's the matter? You backing out?
No, of course not.
Over the next few days, I drop in on Nerdlinger in his office two or three times to give him his bail bond guarantee, a little leather memo book with his name embossed on it, a promotion feature for our clients, and to collect his check of $79.52 for the automobile policy. All my visits go down in his secretary's diary. My diary will correspond if checked later. Then comes something I wasn't counting on. I'm in my office.
Come in.
Mr. Huff?
Lola. Mr. Sacchetti.
Sir?
We're sorry to barge in like this.
Oh, no. You're welcome.
But we've got a favor to ask. It's all your fault, really.
My fault?
Well, that sales pitch you gave Dad the other night about being able to raise a loan in his car?
Yeah?
Well, I was listening to every word of it, and, well, we've come to take you up on it. Nino and me.
Because of all the competition I get from the automobile club on loans, I've had to set up my own company with a finance house to offer my customers the same thing. Sacchetti wants a loan on his car. It'll look worse if I turn him down.
So, what makes your car, Sacchetti?
A Ford Coupe.
In your name, paid for?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't see why not.
Oh, you're sweet, Mr. Huff. You're sweet.
All in a day's business. Business I need like a hole in the head. Call me Walter. A few days later, Nerdlinger's accident policy comes through. Now the difficult part. I must get a check from him for $58.60 with today's date written on it. I go to his office.
Mr. Nerdlinger.
Oh, Mr. Huff. It's you.
Listen, I'm sorry to bother you again, Mr. Nerdlinger, but the fact is, I'm in a hole. I was wondering if you could help me out.
Well,
I'm afraid it's pretty bad.
Well?
Got him expecting a touch, exactly as I want him.
Well, Mr. Nerdlinger, the fact is, I've charged you too much for your insurance, for that automobile stuff.
What? Is that all? I thought you wanted to borrow money.
Oh, no, sir. Nothing like that.
Do I get a refund?
Why, sure. The thing is, Mr. Nerdlinger, there's a regulatory board in our business, and they're very strict on overcharging. I didn't even realize I'd done it myself till I was checking my monthly accounts this morning.
What do you want me to do?
There's one way I can fix it. Your check, of course, was deposited, but if you'll let me give you cash for the check you gave me, $79.52, I've got it right here, and give me a new check for the correct amount, $58.60, that'll balance it. They'll have nothing to investigate.
Well, what do you mean, balance it?
Well, you see, in multiple card bookkeeping, there's double entry accounts and single...
I carry on. Total baloney, but it sounds great.
I see. Well...
He looks out the window. A tiny glint enters his eye.
Yeah, why not?
Offer a guy $20 in the hand, and he isn't going to ask particulars. He even writes insurance on his check stub. Which leaves one tiny problem. Phyllis and I lie in bed racking our brains.
How the hell do we get him on a train?
He's going to his class reunion in Palo Alto.
When?
About 4 weeks.
That's it. What have we been waiting for?
But he wants to drive. He hates trains. Claims he gets train sick.
Can you put on an act?
I did. I put on all the act I dare. Didn't budge an inch. Such a neck, Lola's hardly speaking to me anymore. I can try again.
Holy smoke, no.
How about this? The day before he sets off, I bang up the car, so it has to go in the shop. Then he'll have to go by train.
That's the first thing they'll check. And Lola's evidence wouldn't be exactly helpful. Anyway, we need the car.
Jeez.
Think, baby, think.
What do you think I've been doing? Every second of every day I'm thinking, Walter. Thinking of just you and me.
You, me, forever?
Forever.
At last, a break. I've stopped her phoning me at the office. She calls me at home from a public call box. Baby?
You alone?
Yeah.
It's terribly important. The whole Palo Alto trip's been canceled. He's broken his
what?
Leg.
What?
Don't even know how he did it. It's one of those damn oil fields somewhere. It knocks the whole...
No, no, it doesn't.
What?
Don't you see? Now he's got to go by train. With a broken leg, he can't drive the car. It helps us.
How?
We've got to make it appear that he gets on that train, even though he doesn't.
What do you mean?
Everyone will remember a guy with crutches and a leg in plaster getting on a train. They'll remember the crutches and the plaster anyway. At last, the day. His train leaves at 9:45. At 4, I drive to San Pedro Street. Talk employer's liability to the manager of a wine company. His secretary notes down my appointment. Sees me in, sees me out. By 6, I'm home. A hot, hot, sticky night. Can't really eat, but force down a steak and mashed potatoes. Lay out my books and tables as though I'm spending the evening working out a deal for my client.
Walter.
Baby?
Blue.
Nerdlinger's wearing his blue suit. I put on an identical one, wrap my foot in a thick gauze bandage and wind it round with adhesive tape so it looks like a plaster cast. Only I can cut it off in 10 seconds flat, slip a pair of horn-rimmed glasses in my pocket. 8:40, phone my secretary at her home.
Yes?
Hello, Nettie?
Mr. Huff.
Nettie, did you see my rate book in the office before I left?
No, Mr. Huff, I'm afraid I didn't.
I'm working on that wine merchant's public liability stuff, and I need it.
Well, I could run down to the office.
No, Nettie, never mind. That's all right. See you in the morning.
Oh, yes, Mr. Huff. See you in the morning.
Nettie lives in Burbank. A toll call. Phone company records will show I phoned at 8:40 exactly. 8:45, climbing to my car. Parked near Nerdlinger's. Hurry through the bushes to their garage. Phyllis has left the doors open. Slip in. Hide down behind the passenger seat.
Lola's gone to this picture show.
That's what you told me.
Help me with my leg.
Okay. Hold there. Of course you never tell me anything.
Don't start all that spaghetti stuff. Put my crutches in the back.
She puts them in the back. I catch a single gleam from her white eye.
There.
And back out carefully.
All right, Brad. I can drive.
There's nothing pretty listening in on a man and his wife arguing. But after all the planning and waiting, it's action. We drive down Palomino Boulevard. The unlit section is coming up. He sits in front of me. Then I hooked one crutch under his chin and jerked his head back.
Harder!
Right!
You've done it. You cracked his neck.
Lift your goddamn eyes on the road, Phyllis. We ain't even started yet.
I love you, Walter.
Yeah.
We approach the station. Nerdlinger covered up in the back. Me in his place. Hat, suit, glasses. Wipe the sweat off my face, pick up his still-smoking cigar off the floor and put it in my mouth.
Walter, we're here.
Call me Brad.
Brad, shall I park here?
Right.
We park a block from the station so no porter in the parking lot opens the door and Brad comes tumbling out. We walk. She's two paces in front of me, carrying the luggage like a good wife. I hobble along behind, hat down, eyes down, like I'm watching where to put my crutches. My face screwed up by his cigar smoke running in my eyes.
What's my carriage?
Car C, section 8.
Damn.
What?
Look outside the carriage. Two conductors and a porter.
What do we do?
You go up to them with a ticket and talk. I'll try to get on without them taking notice.
Excuse me, is this the 945 to San Francisco?
Yes, ma'am.
I carefully make my way, hat down, to the steps. Then...
Excuse me, sir.
Sorry.
Can I help you up?
Thank you,
sir. Leave my husband alone, please.
Ma'am.
He doesn't like to be helped.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Didn't get a good look. I'm getting up on the train. The conductor and porter turning their backs to allow me privacy.
You okay, honey? The porter's putting your bags in your compartment.
Come back to the observation car, Phyllis. I'll say goodbye to you there.
Okay, Brad.
Walk back through the cars. Perfect. Everyone notices me, but no one looks at me. They all look at that great white thing stuck out in front of me. Yes, it's unlucky to look a cripple in the face. The observation platform. Jeez, there's a guy in the corner smoking a cigar. You never get guys here at the start of a journey.
Parking. What? Parking. Oh. Gee, Brad.
What?
I'm really sorry about that parking.
What? I can't hear you.
I'm really sorry about that parking.
Oh, forget it.
I thought I was headed for the station, but I got all mixed up in those streets. I
told you, honey, forget it.
I hold my watch out to her, away from him. Tap it. Still 7 minutes before the train leaves. She needs a 6-minute start for what she's got to do. She understands.
Brad, would you mind if I left now?
Not at all, honey. No sense dragging it out.
Have a good time, honey, and 3 cheers for Stanford.
You bet.
She leaves. I wish the guy in the corner would, but he's stuck there. As the train starts, he throws away one cigar and lights another.
Women. Women sure are funny. Couldn't help overhearing that little conversation with your wife about where she parked. Reminds me...
He tells me what it reminds him of. Then a whole lot more. Me trying to keep my head and face in the shadows.
Women. Plumb dumb sometimes. Especially behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah.
We're through the suburbs, approaching the spot where I've got to leave.
Suddenly, inspiration. I start to feel my pockets, head still away from him.
Wilson?
My ticket. I bet my wife, she packed it in my suitcase.
Wait a minute.
Better go back.
No. You stay right there. What's your car number?
Car C, section 8.
I'll get it. I'll be right back.
We're almost there. The place where the train slows to 15 miles an hour. I'm over the side, climbing down. Let the crutches go. Jump! Crouch in the middle of darkness.
Gus! Over here! Hurry!
We lugged the great body. I dumped him by the track, put the cigar within a foot of him, threw his crutches beside the track, and ran as fast as I could back to the car.
Come on, let's go.
Oh, God.
What?
His hat, it's here.
Grab it, run back, fling it on the track, dive back into the car.
Try, for God's sake, just try.
She drives like a maniac. We hit the suburbs going 70.
For Christ's sake, Phyllis, slow down.
Shut up!
At sunset, she runs a red light.
Slow down, Phyllis. If I can stop now, we're sunk.
Let me drive.
Phyllis, we gotta talk. It's our last chance.
So who's stopping you?
First, you don't know anything about the insurance policy.
How many times do you have to tell me? I don't know anything about it till they find it in his papers.
Second, the inquest. You bring...
A priest. Let me drive.
Okay, drive. And don't forget, stop at the deli. Get a pint of ice cream. Say something to fix the time and the date in their mind.
Shut up! Just shut up!
I throw out the glasses, bandage. We get to my car, get out, don't kiss, didn't even say goodbye. Drive home. 10:25. Lift phone, start to dial. Can't. Put it down. Heart pounding like a crazy man. This is the worst bit of all. Whiskey, knock back a slug, then another. Try again. 10:28.
Hi, Schwartz.
Hello, Ike.
Hmm?
It's Walter Huff.
Walter, you okay? Your voice sounds a bit funny.
No, I'm fine, Ike. Listen, will you do me a favor? I'm trying to figure out a proposition on a liability bond for a wine company for tomorrow, and I'm going nuts. I left my goddamn rate tables at work.
No trouble, Walter. I'll get mine. We'll go through them together.
Oh, thanks. Well,
takes 20 minutes. Hardly a squeak in my voice. Then I'm through. Lie back on my bed. Chills. Violent trembles run through me. Drink a whiskey. Another. Then the whole bottle. I start to get the pictures. The visions. It's cold. Very cold and dark. Eternal dark. Then slow, drifting toward me, all in white. Long, flowing robes floating behind her through the dark comes Phyllis. And from her mouth, all foul and frothing, comes forth redness, blood. I've murdered. Next morning, force down toast and orange juice. The paper arrives. Oil man dies in train fall with injuries to head and neck. The body of B.S. Nerdlinger was found last night on the railroad tracks. Police say his unfamiliarity with crutches may have caused him to fall from the observation platform. Surviving are a widow, formerly Miss Phyllis Belden, and a daughter, Lola. Mrs. Nerdlinger, before her marriage, was a nurse. Hello?
Mr. Huff?
Oh, Nettie, yes.
There's been an accident. One of your customers.
I know. I just read about it.
Mr. Norton wants you to get down here right away.
As I expected, the office in turmoil. keys dispatching agents, receiving telegrams, yelling down phones. I explain how I propositioned Nerdlinger at home. His wife and daughter opposed. I brought it up a few days later in his office. He bought it and made me swear not to tell his family. A few days later, I went back to collect his check. Young Norton has me into his office for a powwow. Norton's got it all worked out.
A clear case of suicide. The company's off the hook.
Suicide, Mr. Norton?
Nerdlinger takes the policy out in secret. Tells no one. If Huff here had been on the ball...
Excuse me, Mr. Norton.
No need to get sore, Huff, but you've got to admit it looks funny.
It didn't look funny at all. Now, if she had tried to insure him without him
now,
knowing...
Walter's right. Leave him alone. Now, your suicide theory...
All right. Nerdlinger's got the policy. He takes a train. Goes back to the observation car. There's this man there. I've just spoken to him in San Francisco. Cole Jackson reckons Nerdlinger was acting funny. Anyhow, Nerdlinger invents a cock and bull story, gets rid of Jackson. Suicide.
So what do you suggest we do, Mr. Norton?
Wait for the inquest. The police might do all our work for us.
Keys mops his head. Thinks real long. Lights a cigar. Speaks.
It wasn't suicide.
What do you mean?
Look at all these books. Shelves and shelves of them. Volumes. Actuarial accounts of deaths, suicides, accidents. Study them, Mr. Norton. Discover things about the insurance business.
I was raised in the insurance business,
you
Mr.
You were raised in private schools, Groton and Harvard. While you were learning to pull oars, I was studying tables. Here's suicide by race, color, occupation, sex, locality, by seasons of the year, time of day, subdivided into poisons, firearms, gas, drowning, leaps, poisons, subdivided into cyanide, mercury, strychnine, 38 other poisons, leaps, subdivided into leaps from high places, under wheels of trucks, feet of horses, from steamboats. But in this book, there is not one case from all these millions of someone leaping from the rear of a moving train. That's one way they just don't do it.
They could.
Could they? Where that body was found, the train moves at a maximum of 15 miles an hour. Could anyone jump off there and really hope to die?
He might dive off. He had a broken neck.
Don't trifle with me. He was an acrobat.
Poetry. Sheer poetry. Keys, I could kiss you.
What are you saying, Keys? It was an accident?
It wasn't suicide. It wasn't an accident. It was murder.
Murder?
Murder, Walter.
Well, what have you got to go on?
Nothing.
Nothing. You must have something.
Nothing. Whoever did this did a perfect job.
Who did do it?
The beneficiary of the policy must be the prime suspect.
The wife.
She wasn't even on the train.
Then someone else was, Walter.
Who?
I haven't the faintest idea.
And this is all you've got to go on.
30 years in the business. A raw feeling in my gut.
And what do you suggest we do?
Hit him. Throw everything at him. File an information of suspected murder against the widow tonight. It's against practice, but I have a hunch they're relying on us following practice. Demand her arrest. Sweat her. Especially, cut her off from her accomplice, whoever he, she, or it is, so they won't have time to plan.
And what's all this precisely based on, Keys?
Nothing.
Suppose she's innocent. Look at the publicity. The insurance company that won't pay a penny to a grieving widow. Instead, we accuse her of murder.
Old man Norton, bless him, for sending his stupid son of a bitch son to Groton and then Harvard. The inquest. Phyllis arrives with a priest. Jury sees him. concludes the bodies to be buried on consecrated ground, who are they to disagree with a priest? Verdict as I wanted. Nerdlinger died in a manner unknown to this jury.
So, Mr. Norton, we lost the inquest. What do we do now?
We wait her out. Deny liability on the grounds accident wasn't proven. When she sues, we see what comes out.
See what comes out. Waiting for that inquest, Sungus.
I've been talking to the police. They reckon it was just one of those freak things.
Freak things? Holy smoke! Did they grill everyone on that train? See if any of them had had dealings with insurance companies lately? Whether any of them knew the wife?
The wife?
Someone else was on that train. I know it.
But who?
They checked all that keys. The observation car steward took a seat right by the door to mock up his slips for the beginning of the journey. He's certain nobody was out there with Nerdlinger except Jackson. Nobody.
I've handled too many, I know. I don't even know how I know. They covered the porter. Nobody went up there? How do they know a guy didn't swing a board from the outside? How do they know?
Sweet Jesus. I've seen Keys with his teeth into some cases, but never anything like this. We walk down the corridor. Halfway down, Keys turns dead white and stops.
Holy Jesus.
What is it, Keys? What is it?
Didn't I tell him? Didn't I? Go for the widow. Go for her throat.
Now, what are you talking about, Keys?
I got it. Nerdlinger was never on the train.
What?
Dead already. Someone else took his place, took his crutches. No wonder the guy had to get rid of Jackson. Couldn't be seen alive beyond the place where the body was to be dropped. This is how they did it. Kill Nerdlinger, drive to station. He gets on, dressed as Nerdlinger. She drives to the place. Train goes past. Ding-a-ling. He jumps off. Body dumped. Drive like fury. She picks up ice cream at drugstore 10:20. I bet he's got a perfect alibi by 10:30. Something the matter, Walter?
You're looking ill. No, I'm fine.
Oh, it's this damn heat.
Yeah.
Come into my office.
Right. So, what are you planning to do, Keys?
Norton's going to sit back, let her come at him, prove it isn't suicide. Fine. Suits us perfect.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I cover her. Every single inch. Three men on her, morning, noon, and night. Telephone bugged, mail opened. I'm going to know everything.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, the other guy, her accomplice, has to show. We pounce, turn that courtroom into a three-ring circus. I'm going to make that goddamned Harvard-educated Norton eat every word he spoke.
He's got us. If she sues and loses her head in court, we're done. If she doesn't sue, it's even worse. All this so I could spend a few minutes out of that hot California sun, hidden away in that dark, dark room. Double indemnity, double or die. Go home. Sit there. I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, couldn't even get drunk. Wait for Phyllis to call.
Walter.
Phyllis.
Something the matter?
Where are you?
Drugstore, can't phone from home. Lola's acting strange.
What's the matter with Lola?
Upset.
That's understandable.
Tomorrow they open the safe.
The policy's in there?
I put it there.
Okay. Your lawyer will be with you. Instruct him to put your claim in.
Walter.
Listen, here's something you mustn't tell your lawyer. You mustn't in any way let him know you know. But, baby, they're not going to pay that claim.
What?
They think it's suicide. You're going to have to prove it wasn't in court. Your lawyer will want to sue us, and you let him.
Walter!
Now, you've got to hold yourself together in that court, baby, or we're both sunk.
Of course I will.
And another thing, I can't see you.
What?
They've got men watching you. They're plenty suspicious, and not just of suicide.
Gee, this is serious, Walter.
It is.
Do you still love me?
You know I do.
Think of me all the time?
All the time, baby, all the time. I loved her like a rabbit loves a rattlesnake. That night, I did something I hadn't done in years. I prayed. The next morning, at the office, things got worse.
Mr. Hart?
Lola, come in. Sit down.
Thanks.
I was very sorry to hear about your father.
Thank you.
It must have been terrible for you. How are you?
Fine.
And your stepmother?
She's fine. Fine.
And Mr. Sacchetti?
I'd rather not talk about Mr. Sacchetti.
Oh.
Mr. Huff, you did something for me once. And since then, I've thought of you as a friend. I want to talk to you. Not as someone in the insurance business, but as a friend. In confidence.
I see.
Oh, I keep forgetting. I'm supposed to call you Walter.
Oh, call me whatever you like.
It's funny how easy I feel with you.
It's funny how easy I felt with her, all things considered.
About my father, his death. I think that there's something at the back of it.
What do you mean?
I don't know.
There was this suggestion of suicide.
No, Walter, I don't mean suicide. My father wouldn't commit suicide. It's these thoughts that I've been having.
Thoughts?
The first time I had them was when my mother died. Phyllis was her nurse.
Oh?
Mother had very weak lungs. One winter she comes down with pneumonia, and one night must have been about 2 or 3 in the morning. Everybody else except Phyllis is asleep. I go into my mother's room. The windows are wide open. It's freezing outside. A second later, Phyllis comes in, sees me, and immediately starts blustering about the wind having blown them open. Only there wasn't a wind that night. I couldn't prove anything. Mother died the next day. Phyllis married father. But the thoughts I had then, I've had them again.
Yeah, hang on, Lola.
You think Phyllis is nice, don't you? Sweet?
Lola, just calm down. What are you actually saying to me? What do you want me to do?
I don't know. Yet. Just for you to listen. I haven't told you everything.
No?
I don't want to. Yet. I can't believe it myself.
Have you told anyone else about these feelings?
No.
Don't. Especially not your stepmother.
I've left home. Couldn't stay there. Got an apartment in Hollywood.
Look, Lola, go home. I'll think about what you've said, then I'll get in touch with you. Okay?
Thank you, Walter. Thank you.
Damn. What's happening? Where's it all going? Everyone in the office must have seen her. Do I tell Keyes about what she said?
Walter?
Oh, no.
Never guess what happened.
What?
The guy in the Nerdlinger case. At last, he's shown. He's been around her house for the last 5 nights.
What? Who?
Never mind, but he's the one. Now watch me go.
Tonight, I don't go home. I stay working late till everyone else is gone. I avoid the night watchman and sneak into Key's office. On his desk, one of those dictation machines.
One, memo to Mr. Norton. Three, Agent Huff. Regarding your proposal to put Agent Huff under surveillance, I disagree absolutely. Of course, in cases like this, an agent is automatically under suspicion, but all his statements check closely with the facts. I've investigated all his movements on the night of the murder, and there is absolutely nothing to arouse suspicion. In addition, I trust him. Agent Huff has an exceptional record in exposing fraud. This whole proposal should be dropped.
Thank you, Keyes. Thank you very much.
Two for the Nerdlinger file. Summary of surveillance reports on wife. A daughter left home. No surveillance deemed necessary. Widow remained home except June 8th when she took automobile runs and subsequent nights mail caller arrived, staying on average 3 hours. Identified as one Bernardino Sacchetti.
Sacchetti?
Since no one's covering Lola, I phone her and invite her to a restaurant. She's glad to hear my voice.
I've been feeling really terrible since I saw you, Walter.
Oh?
About those things I was saying, those accusations. I've decided...
Yeah?
It was just jealousy. Terrible jealousy of Phyllis. She was close to my mother and my father.
I'm glad to hear it, Lola. I think you'll feel much better now that you've got all that junk out of your mind.
You're right, Walter. You're right.
She puts her hand on mine and looks into my face. After the meal, we drive along the ocean. Lola?
Walter?
Tell me something.
All right, Walter.
About you and Sacchetti.
Oh, I told you, I don't want to talk about him.
Well, how did you meet him?
Through Phyllis.
Phyllis?
His father was a doctor. Phyllis had been a nurse. He dropped by one night to ask her to join some medical association he was involved with. That's how we met. Told Dad the most awful stories about him. Forbade me to see him.
But you did.
Until recently.
Why did you stop?
I found out as soon as Dad died that he was seeing Phyllis. You can see what I thought.
What?
That I was a setup. He'd gone out with me to cover his affair with Phyllis. That he and she killed Father.
I thought you and he were out that night.
We were supposed to go to a dance over at the university. I went, but he didn't turn up. Sent word he couldn't come. I covered for him.
There it is. I stare it in the face. I killed a man. And I haven't got the woman. She's got the money. She's got another man. She can leave me dangling on a rope any time she wants.
Walter?
Lola?
You understand what a struggle it's been for me, shaking off all this jealousy, these terrible suspicions?
Yes, Lola, I do. And the worst, most corrupt thing of all, a good, decent kid caught in the midst. We drive through the night. She holds her hand on mine. My hand.
Walter?
Phyllis.
Okay to talk?
Yeah.
I'm dying to see you, Walter.
Yeah, I'm dying to see you too, baby.
Did like you told me. My lawyer's filing suit.
Oh, swell.
He reckons we got a really good case. Can't believe the suicide thing they're putting against Brad.
Phyllis, baby, it might not just be suicide.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean.
They can't prove a thing. They're just stalling so they don't have to pay me. The mean, cheap skinflints. Walter?
Phyllis?
I love you, Walter. I love you so I could die.
Yeah. Like a rattlesnake loves a rabbit. In the next few weeks, I saw Lola more and more. Each night, we would go driving. I can hear you asking, why? Why would you do that? Well, a sweet peace would come over me as soon as I was with Lola. Beyond...
I like you, too. Don't know what I've done without you these last few weeks, only...
Only what?
Are you sure you want to hear? It may hurt.
Better hear it than guess at it.
It's about Nino.
Yes?
I guess he still means a lot to me.
Have you seen him?
No.
You'll get over it. Let me be a doctor.
You're a really nice doctor, only...
Another only?
I did see him. Walter, he didn't do it.
What do you mean?
This is gonna hurt you, but I must tell you the truth. Last night I followed him. Them. I followed them lots and lots. I've been insane. They went up to the lookout over the city.
Yeah?
I crept up right behind them and listened. It was pretty horrible. He told her he loved her, had been in love with her for years, but only in the last few weeks had he started to hope.
Yes?
But this is the important part. They started to talk about money, how he's still short of money, desperate for it, despite your loan.
What are you saying?
Don't you understand? If he knew about the murder, did it, then he wouldn't be worried about money. He knew it was coming, but he didn't. He must be innocent.
I thought you'd given up on the idea that anybody was in on it.
I couldn't face the fact that he was in on it. I knew. Part of me knew he could never do a thing like that. But now I know he's innocent, I can see somehow or other how Phyllis is trying to drag him into the whole thing, trying to implicate him so that he, Nino, is charged with the murder while...
Wait a minute, Laura. Just wait a minute.
I'm going to tell them everything I know.
They?
The police. I'll tell them to ask her about the time I came in her bedroom with some kind of strange white silk thing on her, looked like a shroud or something, and her face was all smeared all over with red lipstick, sort of moaning and making faces at herself in the mirror. I'll tell them about the time I found her downtown in this department store, a whole week before Dad died, buying black clothes, morning clothes.
Lola.
I'll stand right up in court. I'll scream it out loud. Phyllis murdered my father.
I don't know when I decided to kill Phyllis. It seemed to me that ever since that night with Lola, somewhere in the back of my head, I knew I would have to kill her. She must die because Lola must never, never know that I... This way I get rid of Sacchetti, too. Next morning, I send the filing clerk off on an errand. Take out the file on Sacchetti's automobile loan. In it, in case of repossession, is a duplicate of his car key. Get it copied over lunch, slip it back in the afternoon. Now I have to wait till Phyllis phones me. After three nights... Phyllis?
Yes?
I gotta see you.
I thought you said we couldn't.
I found out, baby. They cut down the guys watching you to one shift. We can meet after 11. No. You sneak out tomorrow night. We'll meet up at Griffith Park. You know it?
Yeah.
Couple of hundred yards up Riverside from Los Feliz. Don't park on the road. Park among the trees. Then walk over to my car. And one other thing. Since I saw you last, I traded my car. I got another. Small, dark, blue Ford coupe. You can't miss it.
A blue coupe?
Right.
That's funny.
Huh? What's funny?
See you tomorrow, Walter. Griffith Park.
12:30 sharp.
12:30 sharp.
That stuff I gave her about her watches being cut was baloney. If they follow her, all the better. There's a comedian I sell insurance to. He's got a run in a downtown vaudeville house. Tonight, I catch his late show. Ends at 12:48. Tomorrow, about lunchtime, I go and see him. Chat about his insurance. Tell him I'll see his show tonight. Same afternoon, I go up to Griffith Park.
She gets out of her car over there, comes across to mine here. Got to talk, I say. Get in. We drive up the hill up above the bridle path. Pull in to talk. Only the car with her in it goes straight on, and I jump clear. She dies in Sacchetti's car, no driver.
I work late in the office, make sure the watchman sees me leaving. I tell him I'm off to a vaudeville show. At the theater, I buy a program, almost fall down the popcorn girl's cleavage. She won't forget me. I go in. 10 minutes later, at 11, I slip out the exit. Drive up to Griffith Park. Leave my car hidden in the glade. Run down to Hollywood Boulevard, jump on a streetcar. 12 o'clock, arrive at Sacchetti's apartment house. Go around the back. His lights are on. Phyllis must have sent him home early. Take out his key, get into his car, drive off. Griffith Park. It's quiet, misty. I wait. 12:28. My throat dry as dust. A twig crackles away off. 12:30. Where is she? Another twig. This time a lot closer. Wind down the window, but all there is swirling about is a white, white mist. Stick my head out. Then... a pain in my chest. A flash. Something hit me like Jack Dempsey. Feet running off. If I stay here, in the stolen car of the guy Key's been following for 5 weeks for murder, I'm finished. Drag myself out, pulling out the key, stagger up the road toward my car. Can't walk straight. Door opens kind of funny. I fall in, pass out. softly, very slowly, with this weight on my chest, I float up through the whiteness from under the ether, thinking, somebody there with me. Open half an eye. A nurse. Behind her, he's. Shut my eye. For an hour I sweat. What to say? Are these my last free moments on Earth?
Mr. Huff. Mr. Huff. Wake up. I got some eyes for you.
Hello? Walter? Walter?
Jeez.
You're a lucky man, Walter. This theater program saved you.
Theater program?
Folded inside your pocket. Slowed down the bullet so it grazed your lung. Another eighth of an inch.
You get the bullet?
Yeah.
They get the woman?
Yeah.
They did?
Oh, they got her. And then I got things to tell you. This cam's a honey, the most beautiful ever. I gotta go downtown first, clear up some details, but I'll be back. I'll tell you everything.
Bye, Keys.
I get the nurse to get me a newspaper.
Front page. Mystery shrouds Griffith Park shooting. Police investigating. Shooting of Walter Huff found unconscious at wheel. Here we are. Police are holding two persons. Lola Nerdlinger, 19. Bernardino Sacchetti, 26. Arriving at the scene shortly after the shooting, they found Nerdlinger and Sacchetti in Huff's car trying to get him out. A short distance away was a pistol with one chamber discharged. Both denied responsibility, but refused to make any further statement. Lola didn't shoot me. Sacchetti didn't. Phyllis did. But who else knows that?
Keys returns.
A wild morning, Walter. A wild morning on top of a wild night.
Suppose you tell me what's going on, Keys.
I'll tell you something you don't know, Walter. This Sacchetti had a crack at you. Is the same guy we had nailed for the Nerdlinger case. And your finance house phoned up and said he's the guy you gave a loan to.
Yeah?
Well, of course, if I'd had my way over young Mr. Norton, you'd have been brought into what was happening from the start and been able to tell us about the Sacchetti connection. But we worked out the really important connection all by ourselves, Walter.
He got a loan.
Sacchetti was in your office the day you delivered the policy to Nerdlinger.
I.
He was in there. The girl was in there. What we've been waiting for, the hookup.
What do you mean, the hookup?
Innocent as she seems, pulling something like this on her own father. But it happened. And for $50,000, it'll happen plenty more.
No.
Yes. I've been in the insurance business 40 years, Walter. I thought I'd seen a lot. But a case like this, the gallows can't come quick enough. Walter.
Yes?
There's one link we don't have yet. They tried to kill you for something you could testify to when the case came to court. Now what?
I don't follow.
Well, what is it you know about them they would kill you for? Their being in your office, that isn't enough. It must be something else.
You've
probably forgotten about it.
I can't think.
Doesn't mean anything to you. Well, there's no particular hurry. That's the beauty of this case. You can't appear at a hearing till next week. Meanwhile, our friends, the police, will have Miss Lola and Mr. Sacchetti down at the station giving them the rubber hose treatment. They'll be singing soon enough, especially that girl, singing to save their necks.
I closed my eyes. Couldn't think of anything but Lola. A lot of cops around her. Maybe beating her up. trying to make her spill something she knew no more about than the man in the moon.
Keys?
Yeah?
There was something. Now you speak of it.
What are you trying to say, Walter?
I killed Nerdlinger.
He sits down. Finally, he sees through the insurance scam and right out the other side.
I'll do my best.
Suddenly, I don't exist. I lie there for hours and hours. Finally, Keys reappears.
Walter?
Keys?
Jan's phone to the police. You haven't repeated anything you said to me, to anyone else.
No.
Terrible thing you've done, Walter.
I know.
I'm sorry. I liked you.
I liked you too, Keys.
You don't often get to like somebody in our trade. You can't afford to. The human race looks sort of crooked.
Did you see her? Lola?
I didn't tell her the truth. She still thinks Sigetti shot you.
Why does she think he shot me?
For jealousy. She's sorry for you, but
she's pleased Sigetti still loves her.
Yeah. She was following you when you drove in Sigetti's car. She thought you were him.
Geez, even I worked that out. But what was he doing there?
Huck? There's a story.
Yes?
You got yourself tangled with an Irrawaddy cobra of a woman. A psychopath. She makes my blood run cold. Sigetti wasn't in love with her. He's known her for 6 years. Back then, his father was a doctor, had a sanitarium up in the Verdugo Hills. She was head nurse.
What?
Three little kids died of pneumonia. You heard about it?
No.
Oh, you know how the first Mrs. Nerdlinger died. Anyhow, Sacchetti's father gets the blame for these deaths, loses his license, dies shortly afterwards. Sacchetti has his suspicions. But Phyllis has left, gone to join the Nerdlingers.
The angel of death.
Mrs. Nerdlinger dies. He's desperate to bring her down, but how? He gets crafty. He goes to her house. They chat about old times. He asks her to join this nurses' association. He pretends to have set up anything to keep her talking. But then Lola comes in.
I see.
He's attracted. So is she. He's torn. They meet. He falls in love.
Does he rip her family apart?
He decides he can, so he stays away without letting her know why he refuses to meet her at her home.
Nerdlinger dies.
Mr. Ketty realizes she'll destroy everyone, including Lola. Drops Lola to concentrate on her. Phyllis is very welcoming. All the better, Sigetti thinks. He's really getting somewhere. Vital information.
And all the time your men are watching him.
An Irrawaddy cobra. Then comes the other night. Phyllis sends him off early. He's suspicious. Earlier, she's been asking him about Griffith Park. Back home, he can't get off to sleep. Then he hears his car drive off. What's going on, he thinks. Are they setting up to murder Lola? Catches a cab to Griffith, arrives just in time to see Lola, alive, getting arrested by the police. Lola thinks it was him.
I get it.
You were sunk.
I know.
We've had it all out this afternoon down at the office. I held the whip hand because I'd been right all along. We decided the case must never come to court.
What? You can never hush this up, Keys.
Having it come out that an agent of this company committed murder is one thing. Having it plastered all over every paper for the 2 weeks of a murder trial is something else. Walter, you're going to give me a statement.
setting down precisely what you did. And you'll mail it to me, registered, Thursday of next week, so I get it Friday.
What do you mean?
In the meantime, everything in this investigation is held. We don't know anything. You can't go into court because of your injuries. There'll be a reservation for you under a name I'll give you on a steamer sailing south Thursday night. You be on it. I get that statement Friday. It's the first I ever heard about it. This conversation never took place. If you're caught, brought to trial, and there's any way we can help them, you'll hang.
What about her? Phyllis?
I'm taking care of her.
And the girl, you let her go, understand? If she stays in prison, this whole deal is off.
She's out. We bailed her. It's a bailable offense. You didn't die, you see.
Does she know about me? What I've done?
I told you. I told her nothing.
Thank you, Keys.
Don't thank me. You disgust me.
He goes. I closed my eyes. Then I felt somebody near me.
Walter.
Hello, Lola.
I'm terribly sorry.
About what?
I didn't know Nino knew about us. He didn't mean it. He's very hot-tempered.
You love him?
Can I ask you something, Walter, that I haven't any right to ask?
What is it?
That you don't prosecute, appear against him.
I won't.
Sometimes I almost love you, Walter.
She sat looking at me. All of a sudden, she leaned over close. I turned my head away quick. She looks hurt. She sits there a long time. Some kind of peace came to me at last. I knew I couldn't have her, and never could have. I couldn't kiss the girl whose father I killed.
Goodbye, Walter.
I mail the statement and board the ship. That same night, we sail out onto a mysterious sea. I sleep the sleep of the dead. I, who was nothing, who became something, now pass back into nothingness. Next morning, I rise, ocean everywhere, eternally. Take breakfast, walk the decks, sleep on deck chairs. In the afternoon, I wake, not the same. Before I even looked, I knew who it was.
Walter.
You're on this boat?
Your man Keys. He's quite a matchmaker.
He is.
Seen the ship's newspaper?
No.
We're in it. Quite famous. At least our old identities are. We're the talk of the ship.
You don't seem worried.
I've been thinking about something else. Walter, could we get married?
Married?
Be together.
Phyllis, I've heard about all those people you kill. Little children, men, women.
They're all with me. Together, here with me. We're all one family now. A voyage without an end. I want you to join us.
I stare over the stern, the white, white wake churning behind us. Sun setting over the sea. Then I see something in the water. Dark, sinister, following the ship. A shark.
Tonight, after the moon has risen, we could come back here to the stern. All in white. Dressed for...
Dressed for...
true love. True loving. Jump together over the stern into the arms of...
I'll come. I'll be here.
I return to my cabin. On the way, I see the captain eyeing me. He knows. We don't have long. I sit. I wait. I breathe in. I breathe out. Night. The gentleman in the dark suit still plows back and forth behind the ship, waiting. I dress. Almost gaily walk back to the stern. Await. Then I sense her coming. My bride. White robes flowing. White hair streaming. White face ghostly. And in its midst, frantic, awful, gobbling, red froth running. Her mouth. I turn. I look. We embrace. We jump. I and my mistress. The moon.
In Double Indemnity by James M. Cain. Adapted for radio by John Fletcher. Walter Huff was Frederick Forrest. Lola was Molly Ringwald. Phyllis was Teresa Russell. And Pease, John Wood. Nerdlinger was Michael Drew. Norton, John Garasio. Jackson, John Baddeley. Nettie, Geraldine Fitzgerald. And Sacchetti, Roger May. Original music was composed and performed by Barrington Furlong. The solo saxophone was played by Phil Todd. Technical presentation was by Graham Hoyland, Dave Parkinson, Andrew Lawrence, Fiona Baker, Christine Hall, and Mark Decker. Double Indemnity was directed at Christchurch Studios in Bristol by Andy Jordan.